write this down. Paul Pierce is the mother truth.
And welcome to another episode of The Truth Podcast. A member of the Almighty Baller Podcast Network, ABPN. I'm James Hollis, a.k.a. J. Hollis Hoops on Twitter. Find me on B-Ball Breakdown, too. And I have a special guest today. It almost ended up a perfect week. Damn Bulls. I'm joined today by John Corrales of Red's Army. John, what's up, brother?
So damn Bulls. Oh, yeah. I'm doing all right, man. How you doing?
Damn, I mean, Matt, you can't Garba. You can't be too upset, right? When I mean,
no.
Yeah, Boston played so well. It came down to the last shot. Bad call. And let me ask you, was it a bad call?
It was technically a correct call. He did get a little bit of the elbow, which can have a big impact on the shot. I'm not going to say it was a phantom foul or anything like that. My biggest problem is the wait until you see the result and then call the foul. I hate that. And to do that in that situation, that is a key play. That is a game-winning play. If a player gets fouled on a game-winning play, then he should go to the free throw line. But you should call it when it happens and not wait to see, like, oh, they missed? Oh, all right. Well, then now I'll blow the whistle. It looks bad. You know, it's a bad look.
I can see where you're coming from. I respect that. I've always been a fan of the fact that sometimes the refs will let it roll unless they miss. I don't know why. Because it kind of keeps the flow of the game going. Like, if he'd hit the shot, hey, tip your hat, hit the shot. He got fouled. Didn't affect the shot. We're going to let it roll. He missed, and it, hitting the elbow and guy shooting, it does affect the shot. So, I mean, it's the correct call, man. I couldn't really see if he had touched him or not, and I'm just going with what the ref was doing. Jimmy Butler, of course, said he did. I mean, what else is he going to say? But, yeah, so, I mean, I get what you're saying, but I guess it is the correct call. He touched him. But,
yeah, I always, when it comes down to a final call like that, as much as I hate the way it went down, and I think it, really kind of, I didn't like it, but when you get down to the final play and it comes down to a referee's whistle, I always believe that you have to look back at the rest of the game and look at how could you have avoided putting yourself in that situation. That's always my thing. So,
100%. I've always thought it never comes down to one play. You always could have done something different earlier. If you had hit, if the team went, let's say they went 4 for 12 in the first quarter, and they come back, and then now they're up, and now they're down. Well, guess what? If you went 6 for 12 or 7 for 12 in the first quarter, you're not in that position.
Right. I would say once you put it in a referee's hands, you almost deserve to kind of get screwed by the call. So that's just they could have done a lot more to win that game. But look, what did they win? 11 of their last 13 games, something like that. So
yeah.
I'll take it. Fine.
Right. They have two losses since January 25th. They lost to Washington on the 24th, and they lost to Sacramento, which was another fluky kind of game. But you know what? And that's what Sacramento game didn't make me mad either. Right? No boogie. Everyone they went lights out. They just went bonkers. And it was a close game towards the end. Sac took off. You just kind of tip your hat to them. Sure, you want them to get the stop, but what are you going to do? And then, a last-second loss to Chicago. Other than that, I mean, we really can't complain about anything we're seeing with Boston, right?
No, you can't complain. I mean, in a vacuum, you can complain about little things here and there, but big picture, I like where they are. They're in a really good spot. They're only, three games behind Cleveland. They're two games ahead of Washington. They're the second seed. They've won 65% of their games. It's a good spot to be in. I'm not going to complain.
It's funny because I get a lot of questions on Twitter, and I'm sure you do too, people saying, hey, should they make a move for this? Why didn't they give up Terry Rozier for Ibaka? That's so stupid. And so I'm going to ask your take on it, but my take on it is, okay, we don't know if Ibaka wants to sign back. I don't think paying $20 million a year for Ibaka is actually what is on Ainge's radar as far as building a team moving forward. And so even if they did get him for a rental, I don't know if that's the actual piece that they want to move forward with. And Ainge doesn't want to give up a tangible potential asset. You know, Rozier has a lot of potential. He's getting better. He's already a strong defender. He's already shown he can play in big games and you know, he can step up. You don't want to just give up a real tangible potential for a 30-game rental of Serge Ibaka. You know, and that's
right. I completely agree.
There you go. So, I mean, I don't feel bad saying it. If hearing you say that makes me feel 100% better about it because, you know, I was on the fence. You know, Cleveland looks vulnerable right now. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, Ibaka. I get the motivation. I get why people say it. Ibaka is a much better fit in Toronto than he is in Boston. He is not quite the defender that he was. He's not the rebounder that the Celtics are really looking for. If you look at people are looking for rebounding and shot blocking for the Celtics. And Ibaka is a name that they recognize. They think of Ibaka as the guy from OKC from a couple years ago playing alongside Durant and Westbrook and doing a lot of those things. But he's not that guy right now. And I just don't see, like, Rozier, like, I got a bunch of crap on Twitter for, you know, saying that I wouldn't have traded Rozier in a package for that. Because it's not because I think Rozier is somehow untouchable or somehow equal in talent. No, but what Rozier is a tangible asset. Somehow, some way, he will be a rotation player for somebody. He's got enough potential where he's going to be a rotation player somewhere. Now, how much of a rotation? Is he going to be a starter? Is he going to be a star? I don't know. But right now, he's not great, but he's got a lot of upside. And if you're going to give somebody up like that, you got to do it in the right deal for somebody that you're going to keep moving forward. And Ibaka for Boston doesn't really improve them enough to get them past the second round or into the NBA Finals. It's just different. In Toronto, they're going to use him differently. They're going to use him in some small ball lineups. They're going to use him next to Patterson. He fits a perfect need for them. He's exactly what they need. He's not exactly what the Celtics need. So why give up assets? Why give up Rozier, who another team might want? If you want to really make a trade for a star, you want to go with like somebody, let's say you're making a move for Paul George. You either are giving up Marcus Smart or Avery Bradley, and you're keeping Rozier to fill that role, or they say, we like Terry Rozier, we want him in this package. Now you've already given him up for Ibaka, now you're in a bind, because you can't just spend it, your assets to spend them. You got to do it
especially
the right way.
If Ibaka decides to go somewhere else this summer, so then you basically give him away. Yeah, again, you give him away for 25 games with Serge Ibaka, and which isn't terrible. It's just not the move to make. So, yeah, man, that's why I mess with you because you got it. You get it, and the worst part about especially social media is like the lack of nuance of context, because I'm seeing all I see is they didn't want to get Ibaka because they didn't want to give up Terry Rozier. Oh, he had a bad, you know, then he had like a, you know, kind of bad game. Oh, this is the guy they want to give up for Ibaka. They just don't get it. But it is what it is, man. I actually like Ibaka's fit in Boston, but like you just said, it's just not worth it. It's just not. And even with Ibaka and say we play great, I think we're already probably, you know, Toronto, I think we might have that edge already. Toronto, but, you know, then Cleveland comes in and they're going to be playoff Cleveland. What are you going to do? So first half of the season's over, man. What can you – Has Boston been better about what you expected or worse than you expected? What, you know, from your preseason expectations to now, how have they performed?
I'm going to say they're at the high end of what I expected. So I went into the season thinking that the Celtics and the Raptors were going to be fighting for two and three, and that Cleveland would probably kind of coast for some portion of the season and slip a little bit, and there's a potential for one of those two teams to sneak in and steal the top seed. And not that I think that top seed is going to matter, because I think Cleveland in the playoffs will turn it on and get to the NBA Finals again. But I always thought that Boston or Toronto would be good enough to sneak in past the coasting Cleveland. Now, they played LeBron way too much, I think. He's played a ton of minutes. I thought he would kind of back off a little bit, and he hasn't. But now they've got Kevin Love hurt, so that could change things. They could slip that way. I think that Boston, having won 37 games at this point. It might be a couple more than I thought, and especially after the injuries to start the season. But I always thought that they were going to be pretty good. I think they're maybe playing slightly better now than I thought they would, but I always kind of pictured them in this mix. I did not picture Washington quite being at 34 wins. I thought Toronto would be a little bit better than this, but they're kind of where I thought they'd be.
Right. So I am going to pat myself on the back on the air because I was one of the few people. I thought that Washington with the new coach would have, like, you know, snap out of the malaise. I didn't think they'd be this good as far as, you know, top four in the East, but I had a feeling they'd be right back in that 5-6 kind of playoff mix. And they, you know, I wasn't crowing 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago before they took off. But in Boston, I also said the same thing. And I almost hate shows like this because I'm going to agree with everything you say because you're a smart guy. And I sound smart because I actually, you know, follow you and pay attention to what you say. But now I also, you know, Boston, hey, they're going to mix with three right there with Toronto, battle neck and neck. I didn't see Toronto having this kind of struggle, even though when you look back at it, last year was the first year Toronto didn't have one of these struggles. Every year they go through this for about 20, 25 games where they just kind of fall off a cliff and they look like a team of expansion team. And then they kind of get together toward the end of the season. But, yeah, they've definitely exceeded my expectations. Now, here's the question. Right now, a lot of what Boston's doing is on the back of Isaiah Thomas. Isaiah Thomas, since he came back from his injury, has actually led the league in scoring. I think he's averaging almost 33 games since he came back on, I think, December 16th. Of course, he took over the fourth quarter scoring league. Boston right now, I looked it up the other day, I think they're 26-12 in games decided in clutch situations. And they have, like, you know, one of the best net offenses in clutch time. How sustainable do you see this being? Because Isaiah, we always knew Isaiah was good, right? You know, 24, 25 points a game. That's amazing. That's incredible. That's the most you ask from a guy. Well, he's averaging almost 33 games since he came back from injury. He can't keep this up, can he?
He's kept it up for 57 games. So, and I don't know how many, he's missed a couple of those, but he's kept it up for... We always say all-star break halfway point of the season, but we're like two-thirds of the way down. We got 25 games left. So we're like coming down the home stretch. I think right now we're past the small sample size. This is kind of sustainable. I think there might be like a slight drop-off, but you got to look at the reasons why. Why is Isaiah Thomas playing this well right now? There's a lot of reasons. Part of it is he's really, really good. And
he is
at his prime. He is at his athletic peak. He has learned now how to use his body. My big thing now is to say that his size is actually now his advantage. I'm done looking at it as a disadvantage. Offensively, he uses it to his advantage because he can now use his size against other guys, get lower than their center of gravity, push off where you can't see he's pushing off, and create enough space to get his crazy shots off. And he's learned how to shoot those shots now so well that they consistently go in. So there's that. Isaiah, he's worked hard in this game.
Real quick, sorry to cut you off. One of my favorite moments of the game against Chicago, he drove against Jimmy Butler, and Jimmy Butler bodied up to him. And Isaiah kind of took his first step, and he took this giant second step, and you see him kind of like tense himself and just kind of push Jimmy and get the layup to go in. Mm-hmm. And you know, even the announcers are like, that's a big man move right there. He's sneakily strong and fast, yeah. Man. He's an athlete. Don't let people fool you. Yeah.
Yeah. He's a strong guy. He's fast. He changes speeds exceptionally well. He does a lot that makes him really, really good. Also, Al Horford is a big reason for this. Al Horford, Jay Crowder, Marcus Smart, Kelly Olynyk, those guys are big reasons why he can go do Avery Bradley, big reasons why he can do these things. Now, Avery's been out. Marcus Smart, over the past, before the Chicago game, over that stretch of 11 and 12, he was shooting 38% from three. He's shooting about 44%, I think, somewhere in that range from the corner three. So Marcus Smart, the reputation that he can't shoot, but in the corners, catch and shoot opportunities, he's shooting low 40%. So that spaces the floor. Al Horford, his assist percentage is up to like 24% now. It's never been above like 17 or 18%, I don't think. he's a big reason spacing the floor, hitting Isaiah for a bunch of easy shots, open threes. Jay Crowder shooting over 40%, one of the league's best three-point shooters this season. All of that stuff gives Isaiah that extra few inches of spaces that he needs, a few inches of space that he needs to get to the rim and finish, as opposed to being blocked. So there's that as well. So a lot of factors. They're using him well. They're doing a lot of great creative things with him and Horford off pick and rolls, pick and pops, handoffs, stuff like that. So it's sustainable because everything else is in place to keep things open for Isaiah, and he knows how to use that space.
I don't know, man, and I let's hope it is. I'm with you. I hope it is because he's been incredible. But like the first before his injury, up until fifth, he had a strained groin, right? And he strained his groin and he missed four or five games. So up until then, he was playing amazing. He was averaging 26 a game. He's shooting 42%. 3-point shooting was off. He was shooting 33% for three, but he was having 26 a game up until then, right? That's the first part of the season, and I thought that was great. Mm-hmm. And like I said, since he came back, he's been averaging like 33 a game, and it's a very long. I'm not saying it's not sustainable. This is not a case of, let's say, Gerald Green just exploding for 20 points a game for a stretch, and you're saying, oh, can he keep that up? No, he won't keep that up because he's Gerald Green, and he's going to, you know, be a turf. I just don't. I mean, I'm
thinking some of that was the schedule.
You think so?
Some of that was the schedule. December was a really, really rough schedule, and mm-hmm. January became a lot more home heavy. Much fewer back-to-backs. The competition dropped off a lot. When you look at the Celtics in December, they played a lot of tough teams. That was at Houston. They played Toronto, San Antonio, Memphis, Oklahoma City, Cleveland. Like all of these games, tough, tough, tough games. Lots of back-to-backs. They had a real packed-in December schedule. You get into January, they're at home a lot. They played, you know, Charlotte, New York, Orlando, Detroit. These are teams that lesser teams, again, at home. So his production went up a little bit because the schedule leaves off too, I think.
Okay, I'll go with that. Let me knock on wood. I want him to keep rolling. I love it. My only concern is like, let's say he regresses to the mean. It's more like 26 a game. I want to know because, I mean, hey, we've had a lot of crunch time situations. If I said, I think 26 and 12, that's a lot of games that they come down to the last minutes. And while we're great there, I would, you know, if he's not doing superhero things, I'm wondering where the offense is going to come from. But I think, like you said, I've been saying all year, give maybe 25-30% of Isaiah's improvement, I give that to Al Horford. Al Horford is that kind of guy. Yeah. And I hate when people look at the numbers and they try to, oh, somebody told me that he's like, oh, his contract just as bad as Joakim Noah and Mozgov. Nobody's talking about it. And I go, well, they're the number two team in the East. It's ridiculous,
so
right?
That's a bad take.
It's my problem it's my fault for even responding to that kind of nonsense, right? Because you can't tell me even the numbers, 15, 7, and like 5. That's incredible. And he's not going to dominate the action. He's not going to give you 30 a game, but he makes everything easier for so many other people in that team, and that's why the offense is playing the way it is right now.
That is absolutely correct. Now, I will say this about Isaiah Thomas. The one thing that Isaiah Thomas is that teams are starting to play him with bigger players down the stretch. They, you know, Chicago put Butler on him. I'm drawing a blank, but the other teams that are put small forwards on him, and
Philly tried Covington, right? And Dallas might have tried.
I think Detroit put Tobias Harris on him or something for a while, I want to say.
They probably tried Marcus Morris too, probably.
Yeah, so that is the next challenge. That now teams are going to sit there and say, we're going to switch and we're going to put our bigger guy on Isaiah. And now it's up to Brad Stevens and the staff and Isaiah himself to kind of combat that. How do you figure that out? How do you combat that? So that's the challenge. So if there's going to be a drop off, that's the thing. That's going to be the biggest problem.
Yeah, I have full confidence in Brad Stevens. I'm pretty sure you do too, because that guy's amazing. Mm-hmm. Let's give some grades real quick. I'm going to give Boston an A plus as a team from their I'll give them an A. And only reason I'm giving them an A plus is because, like you said, early in the season they had that stretch where Horford was out with the concussion. You know, guys missing, but they've performed about as well as you're expecting to, and probably even exceeded expectations. So hey, I give them a strong A plus. What do you think about that?
I'm gonna say it's an A minus.
Whoa.
Because they're the 29th best, which means second worst defensive rebounding team in the league, and their defense has not been as strong as it can be. This is a team last year that was one of the best teams defensively. So the minus is because I think they can really improve defensively, raise that part of their game. And I think rebounding can be overrated, but when it's really, really bad, like in Chicago, then that can really cost them. And they can't do that because so much of that is actually effort. And when you're not putting in that effort at that end, it's costing you games. That's a problem. And in the playoffs, when things slow down to get a little bit tougher, that is going to cost them if they don't step that up. So that's why it's an A-. But everything else is great. The offense has been amazing. They've done a lot of great things. They just need to shore that up.
So let me ask you this, man, because we know like Boston's a high-character, high-effort team offensively. I think it's more than just effort, man. I think it's just the personnel, and I love Amir Johnson's effort. I love his energy sometimes, but I mean, I don't think he's a starting caliber player anymore. And he had to upgrade that power position. And Al Horford does, before we got him stretching the first, pulling him away from them, that kind of too, at least as offensive rebound and defensive rebound. I'm at a loss with him. I don't think it was effort with him though, because the guys we got out there, effort's not a problem. Like maybe a team like Sacramento, you could say something with effort. So I don't know exactly what it is, especially since Al Horford was part of an elite defense or a high ranked defense last year in Atlanta, and now he comes here to another high ranked defense, and all of a sudden they fall apart. So I don't know, man. It's hard for me just to say effort though.
If you look at some of when the defensive rebounding is really bad, look, sometimes if you're not a good rebounder, you're not a good rebounder. Al Horford's not a great rebounder. He's going to have some big rebounding games. He's going to have some poor rebounding games. Same with a lot of these other guys. I'm not going to kill Kelly Olynyk for not going in there and crashing the boards all the time. People will, because he's 7 feet tall, and say, that's 7-footer equals rebounder. No, he's not a great rebounder. I get that. However, where I do have a problem and where it is effort to me is when a shot goes up and these guys turn and look rather than put a body on somebody, rather than, you know, seek out who might be crashing the boards and getting in his way. That stuff really bothers me. The Celtics very often will turn and look at shots, and a guy will sneak in, and so many times it's a guard or a wing that sneaks in from in between when nobody's looking and gets a put back. So that is, to me, that is effort. They just need to be able to be more aware and put bodies on guys. And look, sometimes a bounce isn't going to go your way. Sometimes rebounders are better than you. That's fine. But at least make the effort to box out.
Yeah, okay. I'm kind of being a stand, and you're right, because it is. I mean, these guys are professional athletes. They play hard every other part of the game, and just that half second when the shot goes up, they're just not – they're trying to react instead of act, and it's a beating dead horse talking about it, right? Every loss, the same thing. We got crushed on the boards, couldn't stop anyone from getting through them. So,
and that's not okay. That's fine.
It is what it is, right? I mean, there's nothing. It's unless we make a move for another store, for you know, somebody to protect the rim, another space you can grab rebounds. Right now, it's kind of like we're stuck with what we got. What you're saying is absolutely correct. I'm just not sure how Stevens can go about instilling that, you know, at this stage in the season, right? Because correct me if I'm wrong. I know that now, like, practice time is pretty scarce. They do a lot of walkthroughs. You know, it's about preserving guys' bodies and not beating guys up. So they don't do too much like really hard practices. Am I right?
No, at this point, it's not a lot of practicing. It's really when you have a day off, and especially nowadays in the NBA, they don't go very hard in practices. You try to maintain a lot. You give guys time off so they can recover.
Right.
It's such a grind. If you're going through the playoffs, you're playing not just 82 games. You're playing 90 to 100 games. That's a lot. So. But look, it's simple just to look at a guy and say, will you please put a body on somebody? But I think part of it is they're playing so well on offense, boxing out is a lot of effort, and they want to save that effort for running down the floor and scoring. So there's that element to it. So it's hard to get guys to play balls out for 48 minutes or however many minutes they play, 30, you know, some odd minutes, that they will take certain possessions off or portions of possessions off. The problem is when you give up rebounds, you're causing your team to play defense again. You've just played 16 to 20 some odd seconds of defense. The shot goes up. They get the ball back. Now you might have to play another 10, 15, 20 seconds of defense again. That takes more effort than just putting a body on somebody, jumping and grabbing the ball. So
right, and that's if you're lucky.
The Celtics are deep. You can sub people out.
Yeah, yeah, and that's when they get out for three rebounds, they're going right back up with it again. No, an easy two. So it's hey, no team is perfect, and I'm not saying that as an excuse. Obviously, we want to be better. But if you know, hey, like you said, you know, they're second in the East. They're having a great year. Hey, we're not nitpicking. These are the things that can kill them in the playoffs. But as of right now, there's no, you know, hey, it is what it is, kind of right. You give Boston A-. I give them an A. What do you think about Cleveland so far? We're going to do the other top teams in the conference. Then we'll go to a couple players. What do you think about Cleveland so far?
Well, I think that I think there's some coasting going on there with some of these guys. Kevin Love's had a great season. LeBron, I think they're playing LeBron too much.
I don't know what they're doing. 30 minutes this year. Yeah, 30 half minutes this year. That's way too much for him.
He's a beast and a complete anomaly physically when it comes to basketball players. Guys shouldn't be doing what he's doing at his size and all, but Father Time is undefeated. That's the saying. That at some point, you play him too many minutes, he's going to break down. He, even at his amazing physical specimen, he's going to break down. So I don't like what, you know, Tyronn Lue is doing, but I think Kyrie's is just a bit overrated.
Hey, hold on. That's at Reds Army _John. So you guys can make sure Now, and it's funny though.
A little bit.
Here's the thing. Again, there's no nuance, right? People want to say, he's top five, whatever. Okay. I don't think he can do what a lot of the elite point guards do as far as carrying a team. But in his role with LeBron James, he fits it perfectly in his elite. You know what I'm saying? So he's in a situation where we've seen him try to run a team by himself, and that team was a mess anyway. And maybe now, like, let's say you swap him and Isaiah, right? I mean, how do you think that goes for both teams? Let's say if out of the blue, for whatever reason, you wake up, that Kyrie is on the Boston and Isaiah is playing with LeBron and those guys in Cleveland.
I think Isaiah would still be doing a lot of the things that he's doing. And I think Kyrie would still – I mean, I think they'd both kind of be playing the same way. But
right.
I think what you'd see with Kyrie is that – I mean, he's a great scorer. He's one of the league's best scorers. He needs to kind of be called out a little bit for his lack of defense. Like, he really – if we're going to be on Isaiah, we're going to be on some of these – like, we need to at least explain that he does not – by choice, he does not play defense.
Now, here's the thing.
Obviously, he's a great shot, Mike. But
his finals, when he actually was showing some effort on defense, that earned him a lot of equity with a lot of people. And so you're absolutely right. As far as bad defenders at point guard, hey, Isaiah's lack of size and, you know, I guess technique, but he tries. Portland, Dame doesn't give it down, you know, and then Kyrie's right there with him. He's right there with him, but he won a championship, and the fact that he, you know, in the playoffs, hey, that he outplayed defending in the playoffs and in the finals, that makes a lot of people overlook what he's doing
here. He makes shots. I mean, look, he's obviously a great offensive player. I don't put him in like the Russell Westbrook, James Harden category, and I think some people do. That's my point. But I think some people do, and that's why I think he's a little bit overrated. because really, I don't think he's like megastar level. I don't think he's at that level. But I do think, you don't think that some people elevate him to, like, you know, if you say name the best point guards in the game right now, you don't think Kyrie is like one of the first three names that rattle off people's mouths?
Some people do because of the championship, which is ridiculous, right? Again, it's that thing where he played so well in the finals, right? But he doesn't get there at all without LeBron James. So, but I remember people trying to say he deserved finals MVP for his games. Some people, yeah. And some people say, hey, that ring makes a difference, man. Now he's, you know, this elevated him in my eyes. Because I asked that question even before the season started. I said, you know, with this ring and his performance in the finals, did that change your impression of Kyrie? And a lot of people did say yes. Yeah, he went from, you know, 6-7-8 to a 4-5 type top, and then I don't see it either. I'm with you.
So, anyway, if I were to give them a grade, I'd give them, I think, like a B+, just because I think they're kind of screwing things up here with LeBron. I wouldn't be surprised to see him miss a couple of games later in the season.
You know what's funny? I'm with you because I've been on the same beating the same drum about the minutes. Somebody told me this was a part of their plan. Somebody said, they said this beginning of the season, they're going to ramp his minutes up right before the All-Star game, and then they're going to start tailing him off and getting him rest. I don't know. That sounds like a silly plan to me. But, and I'm looking at his career
number. Okay.
He's averaging 37.5 minutes a game. That's actually tied for, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. It's tied for like the 10th lowest of his career. He's only had two seasons lower than 37.5. That's insane.
Jeez.
So as much as we know we say it's a lot of minutes, but looking at him in relation to his career, it's like the third lowest minutes game of his career. So yeah, I'm gonna give Cleveland. You can't really factor in injuries. They're part of the game. They've been kind of lunching. He's complained, and now with Kevin Love out, I thought they'd have a bigger lead at this point in the season, right? And they'd kind of just kind of coast through it because they'd be so good. So I'm going to give – what grade did you give them?
I give them B+.
I'm going to give them – just for my expectations personally, I'm going to give them a C. I thought they'd be floating a lot higher. And I know there's been injuries. JR's been out and, you know, things have been kind of wonky there anyway. But it's amazing. I thought, you know, losing Dele wouldn't be that big a deal for them. He's not good, but he filled a role in 8 minutes for them in a way that they didn't have to kind of worry about. And so without him, it's actually a minus. That surprised me. So yeah, I'm going to give them a C+, I guess. How about Toronto?
Toronto, I will give them a B because I think they should, like, they've shown some promise. Now DeRozan missed some time and they've had some injuries. But They shouldn't be as far out as they are right now. They've slipped to 7 games behind Cleveland, 4 games behind Boston with 25 games to go. There's room to make up that gap, but they're going to need Ibaka to kind of gel right away. If they go on a Wizards type of run, then yeah, but like they're still going to need Boston to lose a lot of games, and they still play each other, I think, at least one more time. So if Boston beats Toronto in that game, that almost, I don't want to say solidifies because there's so much time left, but if Boston beats Toronto head-to-head and puts more distance between them, then Toronto's slipped to – and I had said earlier this season that Toronto was clearly the second-best team in the East, and they have since hit a big skid, but I'm a big fan of Kyle Lowry. I think he's – well, I said Kyrie was overrated. Kyle Lowry is underrated. He is
hands down.
He is probably he might be the best point guard in the East. So
I agree 100%.
So 100% I agree. I think I'm going to give him a B for right now. The Ibaka deal has the potential to really change their season, and they can now put him alongside Patrick Patterson in some kind of very switchy, athletic, small ball kind of lineups that would work really well. Now they can kind of be a more menacing defensively. It works for them, and so they have the potential to kind of make up a lot of ground. But like I said, they're gonna need that to kind of happen quickly. But once they get into the playoffs, I will say I'm afraid of Toronto in the playoffs.
I'll say so. Now you're making me feel bad. Like I'm a jerk for the way I grade because I give them a D plus. And it's recency bias. It's recency bias, and I understand like they have a lot of time to make it up. But I'm looking at the standings right now, and yeah, they dropped to fifth after being second just literally a couple weeks ago, and they had the second yeah. pretty strong hold on second. The kind of free fall they're in, and you know I get it. They were missing Patrick Patterson for a while. DeRozan missed a couple games, but you know I'm looking at now. What's that? 1, 2, 3, 4. They went 5-11 over a 16-game stretch. That's unacceptable.
That's bad.
You know, that's really bad. And then some of the losses, right? They lost to Phoenix. They lost to I'm looking at some of these losses. The Pelicans are playing. Oh, they beat the Pelicans. But yeah, Orlando beat them up pretty good. Minnesota. Mm-hmm. You got to win these games. Detroit's been having their own struggles. They lost to Detroit. So. I'm going to give, I'll even give him a D minus. The D means like, sounds like a lottery team. I'm going to give him a C minus because, and that's a lot of recency bias. They just haven't been playing well and nothing's really changed. My problem with them is they're so ISO heavy with Kyle Lowry, who I agree is the best point guard mm-hmm. in the East. They're so ISO heavy that when everything's going good, they look great. You know, I think they make, like they have the least passes per game or something. Their assist rate's so low. But when DeRozan's hitting these incredible, impossible shots from mid-range, what are you going to do? And he's been doing it so long enough, it's not like a fluke. But, towards the end of games now, and I think they all started kind of complaining about it. I don't know if you saw that. Well, Kyle Lowry DeMar Carroll were both kind of, throwing shots a little bit at the offensive play call in the end of games. So, but it's an annual thing. Every year, we know their coach is on the hot seat. And they get together and they do well in the playoffs and they keep rolling. So, but as of right now, yeah, I'm gonna give them a C minus. And then I'll go first on Washington, the Wizards. I'm gonna have to give them a strong B plus. I'll give them an A because my preseason expectations again. I knew they'd be back in the playoff hunt. I didn't expect this kind of run, and I don't think this is sustainable. But they do have the personnel where they're going to be good. They got shooters, Markieff Morris. Years and he's finally like realizing his potential with John Wall. Scott Brooks, I think, is the perfect coach for them. He's great at managing personalities, and you almost can see, it was rough early on, and then they kind of bought in, and now they're taking off, and they're believing in this, what he's doing and what they can do together. And that shows me, I felt Scott Brooks kind of got a raw deal in OKC, and people say he's a bad coach. He wasn't a bad coach. Yeah. He wasn't the coach of that team, maybe, and he got them as far as he can. But yeah, I give them a strong B plus. I give him a strong B plus. Maybe I guess I can give him an A. I gotta give him an A because they're exceeding everybody's expectations. So what's your take on Washington?
Yeah, I'm kind of in there with you on that. I kind of have a very similar opinion. But there's two things that really stand out to me with the Wizards. Bradley Beal is healthy and playing up to his potential, and
that's a big
Otto
thing.
Porter
yep.
woke up. Otto Porter was disappointing. And now he's finally figured something out, and he's huge for them. That changed the entire thing. You're right about Markieff Morris is doing nice things. Gortat is a tough bastard down there. Really really nice down. I think he's a big key for them. They're playing really really well. So yeah, I think somewhere in that A minus range is pretty good for them, considering the way they started.
Mm-hmm.
I have less confidence that this is, in fact, sustainable. But they are right there, and they're just going to have to kind of keep up some of these things. Do we trust Otto Porter to continue this? You talk about players continuing their performance. Is he going to slip at some point? And you kind of cross your fingers, if you're a Washington fan, that Beal is going to stay healthy. But they have some tough opponents coming up. They play Golden State. They play Toronto twice. Toronto mm-hmm. can flip-flop with them. They do a home-and-home at the beginning of March. So they have some tough games coming up. And if they lose three in a row quickly, they got Utah. Oh man, I mean that's a tough stretch. They come out of the break and play Philly, which you know they should win that game, but
they Utah, should. But Philly played a lot better. State, yeah,
but Utah, Golden State, and Toronto twice. I would not be shocked at a 4-game losing streak. That would not shock me. And then Toronto could pick up 2 full games on them, and now all of a sudden the Wizards, they have a 2-game lead. Toronto could flip with them and be that third seed real fast.
Yeah, and I do remember this last year. OKC was kind of humming along, and they hit the All-Star break, and they came out of the break, and they lost like 8-12. All-Star break can kind of, you know, it's almost going to be a bad thing for some teams, right? When they got momentum and they're rolling, everything's clicking, all of a sudden you got a week off, and, you know, some people get a lot of debauchery, and, you know, it's a week off. So, You're right. That's a make or break stretch, I think, for the Wizards. I think they at least come out of that stretch, like, at least, what, 500 to probably, you know, keep maintaining what they're doing. But that's a make or break
stretch. They got to win one of those Toronto games, and I think they probably need to beat Utah because they're not going to beat Golden State. They're not going to beat Toronto twice. So they need to at least break even with that. If they can do that, they're in good shape. But if they don't, if they go on a little bit of a losing streak, that could be tough.
My spicy take, I think they're going to win both for Toronto. I think it's going to take a second to kind of – yeah, I think they're going to win. Look, Toronto's shown me, like I said, 5 of 11, man. And they've flubbed winnable games left and right, you know. And it's they go through these spells where I don't know what's going on. So until they show me that they're out of it, I'm not going to give them the benefit of the doubt. Which of these – so who finishes second in the East, then? Let's do a little quick projection. Is it Boston,
I'm gonna stay
Toronto,
with Boston.
Or
– I'm going to stay with Boston. I think they've got enough of a lead, and you know, Isaiah Thomas. I believe in him. I think he's gonna keep this up. And you know, you look at their schedule out of the break. First up out of the break, Toronto at Toronto.
Yes, sir.
So
yes, sir.
That's a big game right there. You come right out of the break. You go to Toronto. You're playing on national TV. I think if they win that game, that sends the message. You talk about solidifying things. That really hurts because now Toronto would be, what are they? They would be five games back.
Yep, they're four now. So
they would have to make they would have to make up 5 games in 24. So that would be that's a tall order. And the Celtics have one of the easier post All-Star break schedules. So you come out and play Toronto, and then they've got, let's see.
Detroit.
They do have Cleveland, but they've got Detroit, Atlanta, the Lakers in the mix, Phoenix, Denver, Chicago again, Minnesota, Brooklyn. They've got a bunch of very, very winnable games, and they close out the season with Brooklyn, Milwaukee, Charlotte, Atlanta. So they can close out on a 3 or 4 game win streak. They got the Knicks in there, Orlando, Milwaukee again, Miami, Phoenix. Oh, jeez. They could really
–
I think their schedule is easy enough where they can close out the season pretty well. And especially if Cleveland kind of slips a little bit and there's a top seed in place, I think they're going to want to go for that. So
what chance do you give them of overtaking
in a second?
What chance do you give Boston of overtaking Cleveland?
With Love out, I think, and they're going to have to. They have to reduce LeBron's minutes. They have to. So
I just don't think they can. They have to have him out there.
But what does the seed matter for them? I give the Celtics a 50-50 shot of taking just slipping past Cleveland because Cleveland cannot worry about home court. They don't need home court. They don't. They can win anywhere. So don't get caught up in being the first seed. I don't even care if they slip to the third or fourth seed. That doesn't bother me at all. They won't, but I'm just saying that wouldn't bother me at all because they can go. You're telling me that a fully healthy Cleveland team can't go win in Toronto, in Boston, in Washington? Of course they can. So they need to. If they want to be healthy for the playoffs, I think they really need to dial back LeBron a little bit. So I think the Celtics will probably finish second, but I give them a 50-50 shot of finishing in the first overall.
And that's amazing considering, you know, beginning of the season, again, I thought Cleveland would field, you know, but the fact that we were having this conversation, that's pretty impressive, man. That's that's a testament to Brad Stevens and Isaiah Thomas right now.
Let's do
a couple more projections. Right now, Isaiah Thomas is averaging 29.9 points a game. Russell Westbrook's a little more than a point ahead of him at 31.1. But Isaiah's been at 32.5 or something since he came back from injury, and I think Russ is starting to tail off a little bit. I haven't looked at it, but I did some research a little while ago, and I know since January rolled around, he's averaging like maybe 29. I don't think he's quite even though he's had an explosion lately. What are the chances Isaiah Thomas takes over the scoring lead?
Well, it's certainly possible. I mean, he's right there. So there's – I'm not gonna say that he will. There is the possibility. I'm going to leave open the possibility that he tails off just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that he'll finish – I think he'll finish averaging somewhere around 27-28 points a game.
See, and that's the thing. Like, for him, that'd be telling awfully. He's right now is at, I think, 29 point something?
29.9.
You're right. See, 29.9 right now. So, and that's what I meant, I guess, when I said about sustainable earlier is like, no, he's averaging 30 a game, 32 a game since he came back from injury. I think he falls back down to maybe about 27-28 a game, which is fine, obviously, right? And we'll still be winning. I just don't know if he's just remarkable. But guess what? Every time I think he's reached that part where I'm like, wow, this kid's amazing. He just goes another level. And he's in his prime, like you said. So the sky's the limit with that kid, man.
If I'm going to be totally optimistic for the Celtics, I will say that there is the possibility that if they can't, and they haven't blown teams out, but if they can start sustaining some of those leads, they can start sitting Isaiah more in the fourth quarter, which would take away some of his points.
That's a great point. So I'm actually going to pull for that then. I'm going to pull for his scoring to drop some because they're winning so big. They don't need to play him deep into the fourth. That's a good call.
Yeah.
So yeah, let's I'm going to say then that I give him like a 20% chance because I think the All-Star break is going to rejuvenate Russ a little bit too. And we know he's going to come out attacking.
He needs to be that guy.
He does have to be in a way that Isaiah doesn't quite have to be. You're right. So yeah, I think it's a 15-20% chance. Speaking of Russell Westbrook, what do you think the chances of him ending the season averaging that triple-double are?
So, I actually, like, my initial reaction is that there's no way he can do it. But, okay, so he's played all 57 games. So let's assume he plays the remaining 25. So to average 10 rebounds and 10 assists, you got to get 820.
Jeez.
So he is close enough in rebounds and assists where he can average, I've worked it out, 8 rebounds the rest of the way and still average 10. And he can average 9.7 assists the rest of the way and still finish
still
with
10.
So he doesn't even have to average the triple-double the rest of the way. He just has to be kind of close to it. So, again, with 25 games left, just 25, I think he can do it. I think there's I think more likely than not that he will finish averaging a triple-double, which is amazing to me. I don't know. The hardest thing for me to comprehend is the rebounding because
he's 6'3",
you know,
right?
He has the ball all the time. Yeah, but, you know, how many point guards go out there and average, you know, 10-plus rebounds a game? That's
what
that's
I'm saying.
That's impressive. And that's ridiculous. 10.5 rebounds per game, I can't even – it doesn't compute. I can't comprehend. The only thing, and I haven't tracked this, but my theory is that there are so many threes being shot – that there are so many more long rebounds that he is getting more long rebounds than point guards have in the past.
Okay, I'll say this: I'm an unabashed Russell Westbrook stan. I'm a big fan. I'm not a stan. I'm realistic about it. I'm a fan of his, and I watch a lot of OKC games. There's truth to the thing that they say: their big man box out with the sole purpose of letting Russ get rebounds because he grabs and he goes, right? So that helps. more than I think the long rebounds. Okay. But the fact is, no matter what, I mean, he actually goes in there and he, like, a lot of his rebounds are man rebounds. He goes in there amongst the trees. He's up in the air snatching it out of their hands. So it's not like a case where they're spoon feeding him rebounds. He gets his rebounds. But yeah, that's the part that kills me. Right now, he's 12th in the league in rebounding, right? Right behind, like, a percentage point behind DeMarcus Cousins and right ahead of Nikola Vucevic. And he's playing, like, only 0.2 more minutes than DeMarcus Cousins. That's insane.
Yeah.
You know?
It's mind-blowing. He's motivated to do it. He's motivated to do it. I think he really, really wants it. And so I think he's going to go for it. So I think he can do it. I think he can actually average a triple-double. I can't believe that we're watching it. I can't believe that it's happening. But I think there's a really good chance. I would say there's probably a 65 to 70% chance that that's going to continue. Probably higher, actually. He wants it, and he's athletic enough to go do it. And I think, like you said, if his teammates really are boxing out and letting him go get the rebounds, then he's definitely going to do it.
Yeah, I like I didn't know about the numbers. I like the fact he gave us the, you know, all he needs is 8.8 rebounds, and was it, you said 9.7 assists, and he got it. So
yeah.
I think I'm with you. And man, those turnovers, dude. Those turnovers. But we know that, like, him and Harden, right? They're both a function of the fact that they handle the ball so much. Harden, I think, is actually averaging a couple more turnovers, a little bit more turnovers a game. Right now, Russ is at 5.5. But I think his turnover percentage isn't that – it's not egregious. So people look at the numbers and they think – I mean, those are two big things I want to ask you about Isaiah scoring and Russ's triple-double. And yeah, I got a good feeling about the second half. Boston, this is me, John. So I'm gonna be perfectly honest with you. This is confessional. Do you know what I said? No, I'm almost ashamed, but I'm gonna say this so everybody hears it. I was one of those guys that was looking at Isaiah saying, okay, this is cool. It's cool. But if we have a deal come along for a big gun, like a Jimmy Butler or whatever, because I didn't want to pay him. Beginning of the season, I knew that, you know, 2018's coming up, he's gonna command what, 25 plus mil. I didn't want to give him that money. And for all the wrong reasons, he's 5'8". You know, he's not going to age well. Game's not going to age well. But he's showing this year that, like, the height doesn't matter. The draft position doesn't matter. Take all that out of the equation. You got a guy who's averaging almost 30 and 6 a game on a winning team. He is the linchpin of a winning team. It doesn't matter. I mean, that's the kind of guy you want to keep. Am I right? And so – at the beginning of the season, though, go ahead.
No, I can't say that I disagree with you. That's the thing. Like, we say all of these glowing things in there. That's correct. That his game may not age very well. His game could be problematic at the tail end of his contract. But if you pay him for 4 years, you know, there's going to be some potential compromise in there that maybe that fifth year is a team option or something like that. I do have a fear that it's not going to end well for Isaiah. He hits the floor so much. He hits the floor more than any other player in the league, I think, because he has to get into the lane. He has to initiate that contact. He keeps falling down. You fall down that much, you have an increased possibility of getting hurt. That's really what my biggest issue with Isaiah on a downside. So paying him all that money, that is scary. There's no doubt about it. So you're not wrong to be afraid. I have trepidation myself.
Whoa. See, now you're making me feel bad because he had played his way out of my fears, and now you just brought him right back. So,
it's real. It's real. So
I guess my thing is, like,
what are you gonna do?
With the way the team is constructed and with the picks and all that, you can't really worry about, well, you can, of course, but at the same time, we have less to worry about 4 years down the road than most teams. So it's like, I guess we'll see after next year, right? He had to stay healthy. After next year, we'll see. But, like, I would definitely feel better about it because, I mean, the production is there. CJ McCollum just got 20 mil. You know, and they're, you know, whatever, right? He's a good player. He's a really good player. But that's just the market we live in. A guy can give you 20, even if Isaiah, you know, regresses to the mean, he's averaging, say, 26 and 5. That's amazing. That's excellent. That's upper echelon production. And you pay for that kind of production. You got to pay for it. It is what it is, right? So I'm not stressing too much about that. You know, hey, real quick, I'm going to ask you then before we get out of here. What do you want to do with the picks?
I'm open to moving the picks in the right deal. I'm up for moving anything in the right deal.
For sure.
Yeah, you have to be. Now, I would make a terrible general manager because I develop these like emotional connections to these guys. I'm like, no, there's no way you can trade Crowder for blah blah blah. You know, like I love watching these guys play, but you have to step back. For Danny Ainge to do his job well, he has to be willing to trade anything.
Anybody.
Now, just give up that pick. You don't give up 17 and 18 Brooklyn for anything less than a superstar player. Like that's, you go get Paul George with those picks. You go get, you know, Jimmy Butler. You go get yourself the guy, you know, that big three. You go get him with those picks. See, I always skew towards the known entity versus the promise of a Fultz or Ball or somebody like that, because we've seen promising guys not really live up to that. You just never know.
Michael Beasley was supposed to be a certified star from college. Watching him in college, everyone said, this kid is going to be the real deal. That's how it happens sometimes. And the chance of either Fultz or Ball averaging 25, 26, and 6, like Isaiah is right now, are slim, very, very slim. So I'm not saying like they would be replacing him or anything, but that's just some perspective. Like you said, the promise is great. You know, people keep saying these guys are surefire stars, best. That all sounds good. And just like the Jaylen Brown pick, a lot of people, you know, we should do some of these picks because once those picks become players, they lose a lot of that value because a lot of it's just based on potential. So yeah, I'm definitely open to moving them. I guess the question I'm asking you really is, we don't move him, we got to make the pick. Do we take Fultz anyway?
You know, that's
it's almost
question.
It's almost like you almost like you got to, right? I don't know though. I don't know what to do.
You kind of have to, and you say, look, you get him, and then you either put up. Now you have too many guards. You already have too many guards. Now you have way too many guards, you know?
Yes.
And it's pretty obvious that if you take him, somebody's got to go. So there's got to be a subsequent trade somewhere to clear out Rozier or Smart or Bradley or whatever. Somebody. Demetrius Jackson's playing in the D-League. He's another guy. So somebody's got to go. Now you draft yourself a guard, and now you put yourself in a position to are you in a position of weakness now? Because if I'm trading with Danny Ainge, I sit there and say, dude, you got too many guards. I'm not going to give up too much. You're behind the eight ball. You need to get rid of somebody. So I'm not going to give you too much for Terry Rozier or Marcus Smart or Avery Bradley. You know, that you just start to lowball and you say, you got to move, make a move. And I'm not going to give you what I think full value is. I'm going to give you 80% of the value. And so, I don't know. And maybe that's good enough. Maybe that's good enough because Danny Ainge has so much that you can afford to take back a little less. But it really complicates things. It really does. Unless you don't go for the guards. And, you know, through March, one of the forwards starts showing some promise. And you go that way and you just create more wing depth with a guy that can play like a 2-3-4 position somewhere in that range. Those possibilities exist.
I've actually talked about that.
I want to see Mark.
I've toyed with the idea of actually trading back and, you know, getting a wing and getting more assets for that, I guess. But people are like, you're crazy. Fultz is going to be, this is the draft not to do that. I understand that. That's the concept. But at the same time, I mean, Boston's trying to walk that fine line between we're building towards the future Heat right now, and that's like probably the hardest thing to do in the NBA, right? Because these young guys need minutes to get better, and they really can't get a lot of minutes to just be out there screwing up because you're trying to win games. So, I've been doing my little draft research, looking at the wing guys, and those guys look, some of them look good too, but you don't take them number one or two. You know, it's just not what you do. So What were you going to say?
No, I'm just saying it's such a hard call because you don't want to be Portland drafting Sam Bowie when Michael Jordan is around just because you had Clyde Drexler. You know, Clyde Drexler's one of the all-time greats, but Michael Jordan was there, and you draft him, and then you figure it out. That's the play. That's the move.
Yes.
You don't sit there and say, well, we've got this. We're going to pass up on this. We're going to pass up. Now, what happens if Fultz, I'm not comparing Fultz to Jordan, but what I'm saying is you don't know, you don't want to say, I'm not going to take the best guy in this draft. I don't think Danny Ainge is willing
to do that. Because we have Isaiah Thomas, right. Yeah, you can't do that.
Right, because I've got IT. It's entirely possible that you draft a guy like Fultz and you just develop him and you say, look, you have this. You don't have to come in right away. You don't have to be D'Angelo Russell. You don't have to be Ben Simmons. You don't have to come in and just carry the load. Learn. You can play like Jaylen Brown. Learn it, figure it out, and I'll figure out the rest later. But, you know, maybe he just trades Avery Bradley and that ends up being the solution because Avery Bradley is a little bit older. He's great. I love him. But you got Marcus Smart, who's younger, who's still on a rookie contract. You know, you can kind of work things out that way, and you just deal with it. You just deal with it, and you move forward.
The one thing that bothers me about drafting Fultz to play beside and, you know, behind Isaiah is the fact that the human element comes in, and his whole career, Isaiah's looking over his shoulder. And, you know, he thinks he found a home. And if he has found a home. But just the fact for him, I don't want the optics of, well, I did all this. I'm doing all this at all-star level. And now they draft another guard. What the hell am I supposed to do? You know what I mean? I don't know how that – I know he's a good – no, I know Isaiah's a team guy and he's a good player. But we do know that chips on his shoulder. And who knows how those kind of things can affect the team. So, that's interesting, man. And me and you definitely talk about it more as the, you know, season rolls on. I'd love to have you on again. We'll discuss it as the – you know, from the college perspective of who we think is coming up. Oh, man.
Absolutely.
You know, the All-Star game's coming up and whatever. I'm not even into the All-Star. You know, it's kind of – I just want it to be over. I want to see games again. We go to Toronto first thing on Friday, and then the next game is Sunday in Detroit. Sunday's going to – I mean, that Toronto game will be – I'm pretty sure that's going to be – that's the first game out of the break, right? So that's going to be Ibaka's first game in Toronto. Mm-hmm. They're rejuvenated. They're at home. How do you see that game shaking out?
Man, that's a tough call because that'll be their first game with Ibaka. So,
yeah, they're going to be amped up.
That's going to be you have the potential for a learning curve that will cost them a game against the Celtics. But They've handled Boston pretty well. If they're at full strength, it's tough to kind of handle Lowry and DeRozan. And if they're both healthy, then that's going to be a tough game. I'm going to say that I think the Celtics probably win a close one. I'm going to put more stock into Ibaka not being fully on the same page with some of the things that they're trying to do. Mm-hmm. And I think that'll be disruptive enough for the Celtics to take advantage in that particular game.
Well, I'm going to be contrary just because I want to make good radio. Boston's going to fight gamely. Toronto's going to have that emotion at home. Ibaka, hey, he knows how to pick and pop. Him and Kyle Lowry are going to run that pick and pop, and he's going to hit open shots and be fired up, and Toronto's going to win that one going away. And then the next night, the Pistons. I'm until the Pistons show me that they can get it together, you know, I'm not high on them. That whole situation is a mess. Reports of them having Drummond and Reggie Jackson on the trade, getting trade feelers for what kind of value they get. Oh, man, it's what's so tough having the GM be the coach. Patience isn't going to be the strong point. So, I think we're going to Boston. I think we're going to Detroit. I know my boy Pope been playing amazing lately, as has Tobias Harris. So it'll be a good game. I think it'll be better than I almost thought it would be a blowout, but I think Pistons pulled out. I mean, Detroit, Boston was going to pull that one out. There we go. I spit it out finally.
Sometimes we get in our own way.
What are your thoughts on that one?
On Detroit, I think that Detroit, I agree with you. I think the Celtics beat Detroit. I think they can. I think Detroit's going to be blowing it up. Honestly, I think by the time the Celtics face Detroit, they will have a significantly different team.
Oh,
I think. By the trade deadline,
Reggie Jackson gone.
Oh, I think they're highly motivated to move on and start over. So I have a feeling that's just my hunch that I think that the Celtics can take advantage of a vastly different.
All right, man. If it happens, you guys heard it here first. John Corrales called it. That's at Reds_Army_John. You can find them over at Reds Army, the Sports Daily website. You got anything coming out of the pipeline we should be listening for?
Yeah, man, we're just going to be doing the same thing. So we're going to be running our podcast daily and, just keeping it going, man. That's it.
That's awesome, bro, because I don't know how you do it. I do a podcast. I do two a week, and that just burns me out. So I got full respect for you. You guys are out there pumping out quality content. Make sure you guys follow him on Twitter. Check him out at thesportsdaily.com/RedsArmy. And good guy, man. Thanks for coming on, brother. I meant to keep you for like 30 minutes, and here we are like an hour into it. So I appreciate your time.
It always happens, man. I love the conversation. I always sit there and be like, I'll give you 15 minutes. 2 hours later, I'm like, oh, man. But I love having the conversation, so it's my pleasure.
John, I really appreciate it, man. Thank you, brother.
You got it.
All right, man. Later.
Okay. Thanks. See you.
He told him that I was the bleep, bleep, bleep truth.
I knew the kid can play, but I didn't know he can play like that.
My man, John Corrales. I hope I said his name right. I didn't even ask him. That's right. Obviously, I think he would have corrected me if I was wrong. I hope. So, long pod today. I didn't mean to go that long. That's all we got. Good week last week. Bogus Chicago loss. It's whatever. Jimmy Butler's dope. Come join us in Boston, Jimmy. I think we gotta. It's time for us to put our foot on the neck of Toronto and we gotta keep the distance with Washington. Washington's come on strong. I don't think they can maintain that level of play right now. They're just on another level. But it's all about rhythm and timing, right? And I really think that the All-Star break comes at a bad time for those guys. So until next week, I don't know, maybe next week I'll do one. Try to get another guest on. I think I'm going to get my man Alex Kennedy to come on the show. Maybe I'll even get Chris Axman, that weirdo. Just joke, Chris. Yeah, I'll get Chris to come on the show. And I'll make fun of him and berate him for about 30 minutes. He deserves it. That's all I got. I'm James Holish. Check me out on B-Ball Breakdown and Press Basketball. And check me out on Twitter at J Holis, H-O-L-A-S. That's Hotel Oscar Lima Alpha Sierra at J Holis Hoops. And this has been James Holis for the Truth Podcast, the Almighty Baller Podcast Network, ABPN. I'm out.
I'd like an answer to the question, Judge.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
Napa Know How!
Napa Guy knows not to judge a man by his car's multicolored paint job or absence of modern gadgetry. Who cares if it's technically old enough to vote and the windows are powered by the strength of your left arm? Your monthly payment is zero, and it'll stay that way. Because with over 500,000 parts and a little Napa know-how, you can keep anything on the road. She may not be pretty, but she's all yours. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how!
Hi, this is Maury Moreland Morrison, here to tell you GEICO has more than just great savings. Much more. Yes, while GEICO could help you rack up more moolah faster than you can say metamorphosis, they've also been the fastest growing auto insurer for more than 10 years. That's more like it. Furthermore, GEICO has fast and friendly claim service. That might seem like an oxymoron, but it's not. All the more reason to say no other auto insurer has more than GEICO. GEICO, expect great savings and a whole lot more.